cliffcentral.com. We've got Ivo Fechter from, is it Knysna, Ivo?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. So, yeah, Gareth's in New York doing like high-level media things, so you've got us today, but thanks for joining us. Just before we get into the debacle, which is the VBS and the EFF and other acronyms that are making people cringe right now, how is Knysna getting on after that massive fire? We don't really hear the stories anymore. I know it's a tough subject for anyone who lived there, but it fell out of the press, and are things getting back to normal there?
It's slowly starting to recover. You know, there's a lot of people are rebuilding. A few people have finished rebuilding. Mm-hmm. So things are slowly getting back to normal. I mean, but it was a big blow. You know, there's a lot of buildings that were lost, and some of them haven't been rebuilt yet. A lot of tourism that was lost. So, yeah, it's a struggle. But I think Knysna is getting there.
Yeah, between that and then the general drought in that part of the world as well. It's been tough times, but it's good to hear things are on the mend. So this whole VBS thing, we haven't covered it this week at all because, like, I don't like talking about this kind of stuff. It's just too depressing. I'm going to start off with a little clip that we've got here. It's from a Julius Malema in a press conference, which to me is always also a waste of time. So let me take my cynical side away from this. We're going to play this clip and then we can get your thoughts about what has really gone down in this recent whole VBS thing.
Of the EFF.
Okay, cool.
He brought his financial statement. And we looked at the financial statement. We went through the financial statement. We cannot locate any money from the VBS. I'm not scared of Floyd. If Floyd has stolen money, he will be punished accordingly. Give me something that demonstrates that Floyd benefited from the VBS. His brother did not have any relationship with VBS. He had a relationship with Vele. Now that we know Vele is a shareholder in VBS, it still doesn't make him to be conflicted.
There's never been any 10 million that came into my account. So the misleading information which Daily Maverick has is deliberate. It's part of the whole propaganda machinery to do all of these things. We can challenge this Paul Van Veek to bring us the so-called evidence that I received 10 million. It's pure insanity.
I can tell you that in the monies that have exchanged hands between Floyd and Brian, and all of those relatives of Floyd that he will point at us, this one is so and so, this one is my father, it doesn't come anywhere to a 10 million. It's Praveen's group that is behind this. That's how Praveen survives.
Yeah.
He fights extremely dirty with information, and Praveen thinks we're scared of him. Praveen thinks that we don't know that the rogue unit is still in operation.
Okay, so Ivo, let's just bring this back to earth. And if you can just run us through the facts and what your findings are so far, because whenever these guys talk, it just stinks of agenda all the time. So what do we know so far about this whole thing?
Yeah. Now, what we know is that investigators appointed by the Reserve Bank, led by Advocate Terry Motau, reported, and they called their report the Great Bank Heist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just a bit of background. VBS Bank was a small building society, actually vendor building society, and it was a small but struggling mutual bank by 2014.
Okay.
It took deposits primarily from the rural poor and from their burial societies and their stock fells. It also issued a few mortgages and some small loans issued secured by deposits. Right, so it was a small, pretty meaningless bank in the big scheme of things.
Sure.
All of that changed when the bank began implementing a turnaround strategy, right, under the leadership of Chairman Chifiwa Matotsi and CEO Andile Ramavunga. Now, key to that strategy was to attract large short-term deposits from municipalities. And to secure these deposits, VBS executives openly went and paid commissions, and they bribed public officials who could influence such decisions.
Okay.
Then they made loans which were never collected. They looted the growing hoard of deposits and covered up the bank's losses by making fictional deposits, right? They just basically wrote things into the ledgers that never happened. The loan book grew very quickly in those 3 years, and deposits and cash holdings grew even more quickly. But none of it was reported honestly. Mm-hmm. You know, it was all a dodge.
All right.
Now, the looters, led by Matotsi, rewarded those who participated in the criminal conspiracy and bribed the rest of everyone at VBS Bank to look the other way. Mm-hmm. It was then hidden from regulatory view by not only lying in the annual reports, but by paying off corrupt auditors from a company we all love and trust, KPMG.
Jeez, these guys in the last few years have been so dodgy.
Yeah, I know. It's time to start thinking that maybe they are rotten to the core.
Yeah.
So what happened was the bank was actually insolvent a full year before it finally went into curatorship in March of this year. It was insolvent in March 2017 already. So now this report says that 53 beneficiaries made off with 1.9 billion rand, right, of money, mm-hmm. Real or fictitious money. Right. Now, the thing is, the heist at VBS amounted to stealing from the poor to give to the rich. Right? The poor were its customer base. You know, they were the people that deposited there. It was blatant and shameless. You know, and it implicated almost everyone that owned, managed, worked at, or did business with a bank. So Motao, besides recommending criminal charges and tax investigations and civil proceedings against everyone involved, including the auditors, I might add, he recommended that urgent steps be taken to wind up VBS. Because he wrote, "It seems clear to me that there's no prospect of saving VBS. It is corrupt and rotten to the core. And there's hardly a person in its employ in any position of authority who is not in some way or another complicit." I mean, that's dramatic stuff to write about a bank. You know, it's not just a few bad eggs.
Yeah, it's pretty damning.
It's the entire bank. Now, the bank kind of got to public attention in 2016 when it lent Jacob Zuma 7.8 million rand. You'll remember the pay back the money thing.
Yeah, exactly. They came in quite swiftly with this like ultimate solution to his problems.
Yes, exactly. Government said he had to pay a small amount back on the security upgrades on the Kandla, and suddenly VBS turns up and says, "Here, Mr. Zuma, wouldn't you like a loan to that effect?" And Zuma said, "Yes, thank you very much."
But it's kind of proven that if you were to take Jacob's salary alone, he couldn't actually pay that loan back if it was just his salary account, wasn't it?
Oh, indeed. And apparently he didn't.
Yeah. Surprise, surprise.
The Hawks are now on the case. They're trying to figure out who exactly made Zuma's loan repayments before March 2018, since it appears to not have been Zuma himself. Mm. In a separate court case, I'm not going to give you the details of that now, but it involves the succession of the vendor king. It was revealed that this was a sham transaction, which was intended to buy Zuma's recognition of a king of the vendor whose succession was in dispute.
Okay.
So it's all pretty dodge. But now Zuma's involvement immediately pulled VBS into that circle of political rhetoric that was surrounded the Gupta family, you know, and the stooges, the state capture project. Right. And they cast everything as an epic struggle between black nationalism and white monopoly capital. Mm-hmm. Right. So now a number of politicians and public figures on that side of the fence jumped to the defense of VBS Mutual.
Right.
Now, as the problems grew deeper. For example, in February, the Sunday Times reported that the passenger rail agency of South Africa was on the brink of depositing a whopping 1 billion rand with VBS. The deal was then stopped by Prasa's former chief financial officer, Yvonne Page. At the time, however, the Black Business Council claimed that the reporting on VBS Bank constituted intimidation with the goal to retard the growth of black-owned businesses. When VBS was placed under curatorship on 11th of March, Matotsi, the chairman, who personally made off with 326 million rand, according to the Matao report, claimed that it was all a racist plot. Right? He said, in the end, we were faced with a well-organized and powerful system which does not tolerate growing black banks and black excellence. He wrote that in a letter to the South African Reserve Bank. Hmm. It's I don't know if you remember that the Reserve Bank came to the defense of Capitec Bank in January when they'd come under fire in some analyst report and said, no worry, Capitec Bank is solvent and well-capitalized and they're fine.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. So now after VBS was placed into curatorship, the EFF spokesperson, Buyisini Ndlozi, issued a statement in which he said, the government itself is now precipitating the collapse of VBS and seeking to undermine and hinder black people's participation in the financial sector.
Yeah, which then obviously... stuff like that obviously then just starts off a chorus where you get other mouthpieces like the BLF coming in and shouting that sort of stuff as well.
Yes, exactly. Floyd Chivambu said it. And he went and attacked Ismail Momoniat in Parliament over that in thoroughly racist terms. The BLF, Mariette Venter was a chartered accountant at one of the municipalities who stood up to immense pressure and managed to force VBS to return their municipality's funds to it.
Mm-hmm.
And she was suspended from her post and pilloried as a racist. You know, it's from one end to the other. You get all these people saying, well, you know, stop going after VBS Bank because you're being racist. It's a black bank. It serves black people. You need to leave it alone.
Yeah. Well, from here, I want to kind of ask you two questions. So politically, what does this mean for the EFF? And obviously, they're going to be playing any kind of card they can. I mean, these guys are masters in the blame game. We've seen it for quite some time now. But ahead of 2019, do you think this is going to derail someone like the EFF? Is it going to just sort of strengthen their narratives that they're really throwing out there? How do you see this playing out for them as a party?
Well, I think a lot will depend on the strength of the evidence that they have. You know, they've named Brian Chivambu in the report as a recipient of 16 million.
Yeah.
He says, he got it from Vele and he got it for legitimate work done, consulting work done. But frankly, Vele is pretty much part of the VBS operation. A lot of that money went through Vele.
Yeah.
And secondly, I have yet to be convinced that a 24-year-old is able to pull off a banking consulting contract worth 16 million rand.
Well, I would like to know anyone is able to pull that sort of thing off.
Yeah. No, if you're senior and you've got some experience, maybe. But, I mean, you come fresh out of varsity. And you're pulling 16 million rand consulting jobs. Now, I'm sorry, there's something wrong there. I'm not entirely sure that they're buying your skill.
And let's not forget that just before that, he was the chief merchandiser of T-shirts and berets. So where did his experience come in between getting students all decked out in red and landing this big deal?
No, exactly. So what kind of consulting are they paying him for? I mean, I strongly suspect that consulting is just something they needed to put on the invoice.
Sure.
So it depends on that. And then the reporting that 10 million of that made it to Floyd Chivambu's account, well, again, that will need to be established, and that will probably need to be established in court. But if that is established, then, you now have a big problem for the EFF, because it's not just that they were looting from the rich, which I think their political base would probably accept.
Sure.
You know, if it was a rich bank, then everyone's going to say, well, who cares? It's white monopoly capital. Let's steal from the white people. Let's steal from the oppressor.
Exactly.
But they stole from poor black people. You know, there are people in Limpopo now that are sitting with nothing. They can't withdraw their deposits or their life savings. Or they can't pay for their funerals because of the theft at VBS.
Well, exactly. As you said, I mean, the funeral funds and the stock funds, this is it for communities. It really is.
No, exactly. It's incredibly hard for them. So, if that's how it plays out, then I'm not sure that the EFF is going to be able to just ride this out.
Yeah.
Because that's really not what they were supposed to do: steal from the poor.
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, Floyd keeps suggesting is that we are still the only party for the people. That's very much like their strapline.
Exactly. You know, there's one other thing that comes out of this for me, and it's that we need to retire the race card, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, this racism is both casual and institutional. It's still a very real scourge in South Africa. But when you start saying, you know, that all issues of crime and corruption are actually motivated by racism, and fighting crime and corruption is racist, and is an opposition to transformation or desire to sabotage black business. What they do is not only they give cover to thieves, fraudsters, and corrupt officials, right, which does genuine harm, and they do more harm by distracting us from dealing with valid claims of racism.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, totally agree.
It's they cover up crimes against poor black people by calling it racist to investigate them. You know, accountability, right, shouldn't be able to hide behind the race card. You know, we ought to be able to hold our politicians accountable, whether they're white or black or Indian or coloured, you know, or male or female, gay or straight. Everyone should be held accountable by the same standard. And you can't say, oh, but so-and-so is gay, so we're going to go easy on him. You know, so-and-so is black, so he's previously disadvantaged, and we need to understand. We really can't do that. I mean, we need to retire this race card and deal openly, firmly, and equitably with all of South Africa's criminals, no matter the color of their skin.
Yeah, but if we do that, then I mean, what's the EFF got? We know the BLF will have nothing, but what does the EFF really have if we retire that? I mean, it's a pillar of them, isn't it?
Well, this is going to be the interesting thing, because there's so many people in government still, you know, despite Ramaphosa supposedly cleaning up, that have a lot to answer for, you know, and that we actually need to start investigating. You know, if you look at Magashula and David Mabuza sitting on the in the top six, you know, government is far from clean at this point.
Yeah.
So Ramaphosa has made a start, and the Zondo Commission has made a start, but there's a lot still to do.
Well, speaking of a lot still to do, how do we see this playing out? What can we as the public expect to see in terms of the actual procedures that are going to unfold during the investigations of this? I mean, surely it's going to be strung out for a really long time, especially where there's denial on so many fronts. But what form of action do we see taking place, and do you think it'll come to anything for the people who are victims in this?
Well, look, I think the money's gone, so I'm not sure that the victims. I think the government has guaranteed deposits there up to the value of 100,000 rand. So the smaller depositors, I think, are going to be made whole. If you had more than 100,000 rand deposited in VBS, then it looks like you shit out of luck. Mm-hmm. But at least the poor victims of VBS won't be left entirely destitute. In terms of prosecution, well, it depends on whether the NPA is going to go ahead and listen to Terry Motau's recommendations to institute these criminal proceedings. Yeah, and that all depends on the NPA's capacity right now. I mean, as we know, it's been through tough times with you know, being captured and being basically dismantled in order to protect the corrupt people in government. Mm. So it depends on whether the NPA feels like it can tackle a case like this. It should be able to. I mean, if you look at the prima facie evidence, you know, you look at the Matara report, you read it. I mean, it is patently clear what happened there. It's an open and shut case. So it really shouldn't be hard to bring criminal proceedings against at least a significant number of the 53 that are mentioned in the report.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this isn't some sort of Enron scandal. Nothing's really in the cloud or anything like that. It's quite clear who's involved.
No, exactly.
Here. But Leanne, just...
Yeah, exactly. And it's not a complicated and sophisticated scam here.
Exactly.
You know, this was blatant and frankly a bit stupid.
Leanne, just to kind of put your fears at ease there, Brian Shivambu has said that if he is told by a law enforcement agency to pay back the money, he will do it.
Oh, good. Okay, so he's waiting for the call. There's no morality-driven action behind this. Okay. Good to know, Ben.
There we go. Just before I let you go, just obviously Tito Mboweni coming in as the new finance minister. This is a bit of a tough thing to start the job with. What does he have a role to play in making this right, or at least addressing this whole VBS thing? And if so, like, where would he go with this? Because I know he's already kind of pointed the finger at some really dodgy auditing, which obviously brings into light KPMG. But from his role, yeah. Is this something that he should be quite hands-on with, just to kind of stake a claim in the role of finance minister?
Well, I'm not sure, really. I think Mutau is right to recommend it to the NPA and to let criminal proceedings progress and do that. He might need to look at banking regulations and see in what ways did VBS actually violate their banking license and all the banking regulation. I mean, there's a lot of banking regulation exactly to prevent this sort of stuff from happening.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I remember when Regal Bank went under. You know, that sort of scam. It was picked up by banking regulations, and that's banking regulations were strengthened after that to prevent that sort of thing from happening again. Obviously, these guys sailed under the radar, and regulators were just obviously prepared to look the other way. Well, either that, or they were completely bamboozled by the auditors.
Yeah,
which is what they say happened.
Yeah, but now just like one last thing, I want to kind of add to this. There's been talk of a state bank. Mm-hmm. when Tito Mboweni came into the new finance minister post, people were digging up old tweets. One of the things, I don't know if it was right or if it was wrong, you never can trust these things, but he was very much behind a state bank. Would something like this really put into jeopardy any sort of confidence that people might have in such a thing, if there were any people who would actually have any confidence to start with?
I was one of the people who went through all of his tweets for this year, and I found some very interesting little tidbits. And one of them is that he's always been in favor of the idea of a state bank. You know, if you look at the performance of our state-owned enterprises, would you really trust this government with a bank?
No.
Right. It's as simple as that. And look, I actually think a lot of people think Tito Mboweni is a pair of safe hands and everyone's quite happy with the finance minister. I'm not. You know, I think that he is a pretty hardcore socialist. He recommends a Marxist-Leninist theory for reading matter, you know, to his followers on Twitter. He's a Marxist and an old, dyed-in-the-wool Marxist. He wants a state bank. At one point he says we need to cede all land to the government, and then the land can allocate it to the people who need it. Well, nationalizing all land puts him pretty much to the left of the EFF.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of Marxist policies, Marxist theory. So yeah, I'm not all that optimistic about Tito Mboweni as finance minister.
Yeah,
at the Reserve Bank, he had a lot less responsibility. You know, he needed to keep inflation targeted, and that was it. The only lever he really had was the interest rate.
Yeah, exactly. So this again, I mean, if you play into those conspiracy theories that the EFF are actually pulling the strings here, how out of all the Gupta dealings, Nene was the guy that took the fall, and out of all the finance ministers that could be replaced, and we now get a guy who is just like it said, like a dyed old Marxist socialist. That does seem quite worrying to me.
No, I was having a discussion last night. You know, won't say who was involved, but we were trying to figure out whether Julius Malema was actually Cyril Ramaphosa's man, or vice versa.
Oh.
That Julius Malema was playing the long game here, and that after the 2019 elections, he's going to basically be in a position where all of his friends and, you know, the people he picked are in government, and he himself will be in a position to go back to the ANC as its deputy leader, deputy president.
Right, which is
ultimately becoming the ANC president. Then,
not the hardest.
Which
thing,
means that the,
not the hardest thing.
Which
to
means
believe.
That. Too.
It's not the hardest thing to believe.
No, indeed, and that sort of completes the socialist takeover for Malema, you know, for the hard left in this country. And I think that's entirely plausible.
Yeah, it really is. Ivor, thanks so much for your time this morning. Great thoughts as always. And I think this is something that, as Leanne said, it is going to drag out with all the denial and those things that are going on. If you want to follow Ivor, it's just, that's your full name, eh? Ivor on Twitter.
My full, yeah. Ivo Factor on Twitter.
Okay, great. Thanks so much. All right, that's the Burning Platform for this week. Next week, Gareth will be back to do more with the Burning Platform. Of course, it's just the only place where Nando's, of course, presents each and every week to you, where we get down to the bottom, the crux of it, Leanne, the nuts and bolts. And all of these things, hey, it's not like it's tip of the iceberg. It really isn't. These are well-constructed, thought-out things. And, you know, you get someone like Ivor on there who is, of course, he's an independent journalist who just knows what he's talking about. And like, how deep the rot is in some things, and how worrying is when your finance minister is basically a socialist.
Oh, it's very concerning. But also how... This isn't a plot by one man who was sitting in his lair and thought up this whole thing by himself.
No, while making
it's
beady hand gestures.
A whole lot of people.
Jeez, that PBS thing.
Have banded together to get this right.
I mean, as Ivor said there, everybody was basically complicit in this whole thing.
Yeah.
Imagine everyone is looking to steal. And it
how do you sleep at night?
Like there's bank heists in the past that have gone jeepers. That's a bit strong, actually. You're telling me they took all this money from the poor people? Yeah. Although it is, yeah. So if you are listening live, you didn't catch all of that. Today's the Burning Platform brought to you by Nando's with Ivo Facto. It goes straight into the whole VBS thing, of which there is just so much. CliffCentral.com.